What's up, comic fans? This is PT coming from my garage. It's raining outside in Texas, and it's Christmas Eve. But you know what? I don't think there's any other person on earth I'd rather spend Christmas Eve morning with than my co-host over there, Brian Coors Hair over there with his Megatron shirt on. What'd you just say?
I said the feeling is mutual.
Oh, how sweet. You know, it's funny, Brian, we're recording this on Christmas Eve morning, but it'll come out on Tuesday after Christmas. When Christmas is over, I feel like people want nothing to do with Christmas for a while.
Yes. I mean, this year, I don't know, like every year it seems Christmas gets earlier and earlier. Like people start whipping out the decorations and the Christmas music and everything.
Yeah,
that's even a thing at my job. Like you know, a lot of radio stations like to flip their format to Christmas music.
Oh no!
And like literally, the stations from different companies will like try. It's like who can pull the trigger faster this year? They have to get the jump on them. It's horrible.
It's funny because I like Christmas music. I guess like when it's playing, especially like if it's some kind of Christmas event. But I hate when it's like just on the radio, and I hate when you go to stores and that's all they're playing.
I've recently realized that I don't think the reason why I don't think I'm a fan of Christmas music is because it is so very narrowly themed.
Yeah.
Which I came to the realization of why I don't like Christian music, because it's very narrowly themed. And Christmas music is not much different. It's a little broader, a little broader maybe, but not by much.
Yeah. Whenever everything's real narrow, hey, if we're just being controversial and not talking about what we're supposed to talk about, Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, I kind of feel the same way about like country music too, where I feel like it's very narrowly themed too.
Yeah, I could say that too.
Here, let me do a little segue. But so it's funny because for the music choices for this movie, Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, I feel like the music choices are so generic. It's like, give me a freaking break how generic the music choices are.
Yeah, the most cliche songs you could possibly imagine, like, you know, Bad to the Bone, and I can't remember what else, but it's just like, oh, really?
Born to be Wild, right?
Born to be Wild, yeah. Not Bad to the Bone, Born to be Wild, yeah, that's right.
This opening montage sequence where Aquaman is beating a bunch of pirates on a boat and it's playing Born to be Wild. And like, it seems to fit perfectly with Jason Momoa, but it's so like, come on, like what else you want to pick?
You know, I don't know how I know you're getting up real early for this. So I don't know if you saw the message I sent you, but I sent you a little snippet from an interview with Jason Momoa and Patrick Wilson. Mm-hmm. And even Jason Momoa is like, I look at you, like you to Patrick Wilson and Orm, like I see Aquaman. Like, yep, I don't know. Yep. You're talking about when he got cast, and I'm like, he doesn't even see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that clip before, luckily. So I know what you're talking about. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. He thinks that he should be Lobo instead. And Patrick Wilson.
That was also in the clip. He heavily mentions Lobo, wanting to play Lobo. Says he hasn't gotten called for Lobo, but I'm sure that has actually happened and will happen.
Yes. Ditto. You know, it's funny because in that clip, I remember it was when Zack Snyder was putting together his version of the Justice League, and he had just found out that Ben Affleck had been cast as Batman. But Jason Momoa himself auditioned to be Batman.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, this must be the exact clip you saw, because that was how it started. So.
Yeah. Could you imagine a Jason Momoa Batman?
No.
Yeah. I don't think Jason Momoa couldn't even imagine it. Yeah. but it's funny because he's like, you know, okay, I know what I'm here for. I'm here to be Lobo. He says to the casting director or Zack Snyder or whatever. And then they're like, Lobo's not even in this universe. And I was thinking about how like Lobo just wouldn't work in the Snyderverse.
No, he's too. He's too Jason Momoa.
There you go. Well, no, it's just like him riding the bike. You have to have Lobo riding the bike through space, and that just doesn't work in that Zack Snyder.
No, universe. I don't think so. It's too like goofy almost in a way, but I don't mean that in a bad way, because I like Lobo.
Yeah, me too. So, but you know what do you call it? The Snyderverse or the DCEU. Which is this weird kind of Frankenstein monster of like sort of the Snyderverse, but then a whole bunch of random things. A lot of like trying to be like the MCU
It's dead now. We've come to the last film.
Yes, it's done and over, and it ends with somebody eating a cockroach.
Yeah, I use that as the thumbnail for this episode. You'll see.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So we're going to rank, everybody, we're going to rank all of the DCEU movies once we finish talking about Aquaman and the Last Kingdom. And I'm actually really excited to hear about your rankings, Brian, too. So why don't we just jump into this movie and just do a broad, generic, did you enjoy this movie?
Honestly, I think I did. I sort of did enjoy it. I wasn't expecting really anything from it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fine. Much like I felt like about like Blue Beetle, like it was nothing extraordinary. With the exception of, I did feel that kind of emotional connection with like the brother stuff and, you know, protecting their child, which I guess they just call him Junior the whole movie.
Right.
Which feels weird to me. I don't know. I know that's probably in the comics at some point where he's just like Arthur Jr. or something like that, but I don't remember that. So it felt weird to me.
Right.
But I didn't get as much of that connection from Blue Beetle as I did. So I would say they're both kind of like fine, like nothing horribly, well, I wouldn't say horribly wrong, but nothing extraordinary,
mm-hmm.
But nothing too terrible. Like I didn't have any like glaring issues like I have with some of the other movies in the DC universe.
Yeah. As far as glaring issues go, like I think about the original Aquaman and I think about this one sequence where him and Mera are coming out of the water and they're playing like a Pitbull song and they're walking into the desert. And I remember just like sort of like cringing and being kind of embarrassed for the filmmakers, which is kind of ironic because the guy that directed this is James Wan. James Wan, regardless of the movie that he's making, it's always visually super interesting.
Agreed.
You know, he's made a lot of horror movies, so we've talked about him on the LasterCast a lot. And the majority of his movies I've enjoyed. I didn't really like Malignant, which is like one of his more recent movies. But, you know, Malignant is fucking batshit crazy at the very end. So, I mean, even that, like none of his movies are dull, that's for sure.
Yeah. I can say that. I mean, I guess I haven't seen too many of his horror movies, but every time I think about the first Aquaman, and that one of my favorite scenes is when those like sea creatures are attacking the boat.
Oh yeah,
and it always
yeah.
reminds me of Scott Snyder's The Wake.
No. Oh yes, that comic. Yes.
Yeah, the comic Snyder, The Wake. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I would love to. I think he would be a great choice to direct something like that.
Yeah, really good point on this Christmas Eve morning. Yeah. That does feel very much like The Wake. Those creatures are called the Trench, and they're from the New 52 Aquaman run by Geoff Johns. Yeah. It's interesting because, like, this movie, it's not really based on any specific modern Aquaman comic, but I actually haven't read any modern Aquaman comics in a while.
I think the vibe is heavily New 52 Aquaman. Like, I don't think it's ripped from any stories particularly, but like that's the vibe I get from it. I mean, the origin is probably closest to that, I think.
Oh yeah. I'm trying to think of the scientist that is with Black Manta. Do you remember his name? Yeah, right. And the actor that plays him is that guy from WandaVision.
Randall Park.
Thank you so much. Thank you. This is too much racism for Christmas Eve morning, but I could have sworn that character, when he makes a little cameo at the end, was played by B.D. Wong in the first one.
No, it was him.
It was always Randall Park.
Yeah, okay, it was Randall Park, yeah.
Okay. So that's stupid that I made that mistake. Okay, so in the New 52, there is like this thing of him and Black Manta teaming up, which that is a big part of this movie. There's this whole sequence of like, you know, Randall Park is always just like kind of looking at what Black Manta's doing and is always going, oh, I'm getting a little nervous. You know,
that happens a little too many times.
Yes. But you know what doesn't happen as much as I thought was going to happen?
No, what?
Sequences where someone's talking, giving exposition, and then there's a random explosion to move the scene forward.
Okay, yeah. That didn't happen very often, yeah.
That happens. about seven times in the first movie.
Well, they needed to just get out of the act, the bad acting in the first one, sort of.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because it happens at least once in this movie, and someone says, like, oh, I hate when that happens. So, like, it was like a little reference to the first movie. It's great. So, Brian, I think I've asked you this before, but did you watch that Netflix documentary, Depp versus Heard?
I have not seen the entire documentary. I've seen plenty of coverage of it, though, so maybe I know what you're going to ask me anyway.
Oh, man, I wish I was more awake because I would just tell her, ask you a random question instead. But just like, how did you feel about her just being like pretty much not in the movie at all?
You know what? I thought she was, she felt like she was in the movie more than I was expecting.
Right.
Like I remember hearing that trial that she's only in 10 minutes. I mean, maybe it was only 10 minutes of screen time, but it didn't feel like it. I don't feel like they like sidelined her. I think she was appropriately used, I guess. So it, like, I was actually kind of surprised by that. Like I was expecting her to be like, you know, killed off in 5 seconds or something, or like something like Cyclops and X-Men 2, like some kind of that level shenanigans, but it really wasn't. She does kind of get sidelined early on, but then she does come back for the big end sequence and she's fairly present. She does some things, maybe doesn't say too much, yeah. But I don't feel like the movie suffered or was thrown off by the horror participation in it, mm-hmm. or amount or that lack thereof.
Yeah. It's funny because like, from what I do remember of Mera in this movie, I do remember her like being in this bed after Black Manta blasts her, right? And I remember like her body being kind of burned. I was like, oh, okay. You know, I thought she was going to die there. But besides that, there isn't any real dialogue that stands out. There's like no chemistry between her and Jason Momoa. But there's a bunch of sequences where she's kind of like almost like Storm and she's moving and her eyes are glowing. And then, you know, water is reacting to what she's doing. And I was thinking about how the bare minimum you have to do as a filmmaker is to take these actors and make them look like they're in a comic book. Like, that's the bare minimum you have to do.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, with that character, they at least accomplish that, where it's like, it looks like a panel from a comic when she's, like, yeah. manipulating the water.
And honestly, maybe her lack of participation in this movie is also due to the fact of the lack of chemistry between her and Jason Momoa. I mean, that was one of the biggest flaws. That was the main flaw of the first movie, I would say.
Yeah.
And I think Patrick Wilson fares a little better with chemistry-wise with Jason Momoa. Not, like, great. I think, really, just Amber Heard is an okay actress.
Right.
Not spectacular, but she's okay. But Jason Momoa is not a good actor.
Oh, shit.
I don't think.
Oh, man.
I think he can maybe play some very specific roles. Maybe this wasn't the right one.
That is... Okay. Okay, so... Okay, that's interesting.
I'm laying more of the blame on Jason Momoa in terms of that chemistry department there, I think, unfortunately. I mean, I don't dislike him. I'm sure that... I mean, I did like him as Khal Drogo, where he said almost nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, maybe he could take on a more serious role. I don't think I've really seen him in much else other than these movies and Game of Thrones, really. Mm-hmm. You know, so maybe there is something better out there. Maybe there's a different type of role he's played that I would like better. But I can't go back to not thinking that this was just not the right casting.
Yeah. Well...
Let me clarify that one. I know I'm interrupting you. Let me clarify one statement with that. I think they definitely needed to make a bold choice when casting this, because Aquaman is a joke of a character to many people, to many casual fans of things that are generally aware, just barely generally aware of superheroes. Aquaman is a joke. He talks to fish, you know, insert Family Guy rep joke or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think they needed to make some kind of bold casting choice for this. I think they did. I just ultimately don't think it really panned out. It didn't pan out. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Aquaman talks to fish. That is like the big joke, right? And it's funny because I think that's like the second line of narration that Aquaman has in the very beginning of the movie. He's like, my name is Arthur Curry and I talk to fish.
Yeah.
And he says something like, but that's okay because I got my sweet ride jet. And it's like a big CGI seahorse.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. When we record so early, my brain isn't working so well. I can't think of a better example of this. But Saturday Night Live and Mad TV would sometimes do these things where they would do a movie trailer and they would make the trailer look almost exactly like the movie. But essentially, they would change one key factor to where, like, one of the main characters was a different character. The example I can think of is Gump Fiction, where essentially they did like Pulp Fiction, but it was Forrest Gump was like John Travolta's character.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about Jason Momoa as Aquaman, where it's like everything is set to be the Aquaman from the comics, but then you have this like kind of bikery surfer dude, like bro kind of guy playing this character that's usually this sort of uptight, you know, blonde guy that does look like Orm in this movie.
Even I would even say he acts like him practically, you know?
Yes.
Honestly, though, but as much as I think Patrick Wilson would have made a better Aquaman, it would have been a better Aquaman for a very niche audience.
Right.
Like, it wouldn't have had, no one would have seen it, honestly. Because you have to, like I said, they need to make that bold casting choice of somebody who kind of has like cool and swagger, and Jason Momoa definitely has that, but it's not Aquaman.
Yeah, and it's so weird because the Aquaman character, he's different from, let's say, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, the main Trinity. Actually, I think everybody else in the Justice League, Aquaman is the standalone because he does vary from like this sort of like very clean shaven, very tight and well kept looking blonde guy with an orange shirt to this like scraggly bearded guy sometimes that doesn't have a hand, he has like a hook instead, and he could either be kind of like this sort of gruff pirate warrior, or he could just be this sort of like almost like non-entity, like Aquaman when he's not that gruff pirate warrior, it like almost has like no personality whatsoever.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But at the same time, like, I go back to, I think about, you know, that Atlantis story in Young Justice. And I think about, like, what if there was a live action with this and it was Patrick Wilson as Aquaman? Like, that, to me, would be awesome. I don't think it would have mass appeal, but I think to me, and probably to you, would be awesome.
Yes. And, you know, I'm really glad that you brought up Young Justice. I wasn't even thinking of that. But, like, Aqualad in Young Justice is, like, one of my favorite characters.
Yes. Yeah. He's one of the best characters of the show.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have this like goofy movie and we actually really haven't talked about the details of it too much. I want to talk about Black Manta. I remember that one of the main complaints that people made was, oh, he's fighting Black Manta again. Didn't he like beat him pretty easily in the first movie? How'd you feel about Black Manta coming back?
My son loves Black Manta. I don't know why. I think it was because he was playing this Teen Titans Go game where you like battle little minifigures, and I think he had Black Manta and thought he looked cool and he used them like the whole game. I think that's where it came from, but he loves Black Manta, so I was happy to see Black Manta again. I do think it's a cool design. I like the character. You know, Brandon made me buy we bought him like a Black Manta trade because there was just one ever. And I haven't read it, but I mean, I'd like to. But, you know, I'm interested in the character. I'm glad it's back. I don't know who else they would have used at this point. I have no idea. So I was happy to see it back. And I think it's fine. They gave him a power-up weapon. That's fine. Like, that seems like something comic booky, you know? Like, that seems like a scheme that character would have.
Yeah.
Back in the day. Like, in older comics, I would say.
Right. I mean, I fucking love Black Manta. He's probably my top 10 of DC villains. He's just like so like cool and cold. And his design is like both ridiculous and awesome at the same time.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at. Like, it is kind of ridiculous because it's the big helmet with big eyes. But it's kind of cool. And, you know, we mentioned James Wan and the horror thing before. You know, there's the one scene in the movie where Black Manta goes to... Jango Fett's house, Boba Fett's house, whatever you want to call it.
And, he's both.
That's right. And he's standing there in the darkness. You see the red eyes. I'm like, that's kind of fucking creepy.
That was
a great shot, great visual.
that was 1,000% a comic book panel. You know what I'm saying? That was perfect. Yeah. And I'm actually surprised that Jango Fett didn't die.
Yeah, I was expecting him to die too. Nobody died?
Nobody died. Maybe, yeah.
I guess Black Manta died, sort of.
Yeah, but even him, if they were to make a sequel, they could say that he still lives somehow, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Totally can get out of that one, yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, the whole plot with Black Manta, he's collecting this green stuff that's called, like,
Yeah.
And it's funny because the one thing, you know, like a movie like this, you can pretty much just predict all of the beats. And you're like, okay, this is going to happen here. This is going to happen here. But the fact that they implied that essentially global warming was happening in the time of ancient Atlantis, I was not expecting that.
I was not either. And also, you know, orichalcum is like a famous, like, material used in, like, fantasy worlds and video games. I don't know if it's real or not. I have no idea. Maybe it is. I don't know. I never in a million years thought it would produce greenhouse gases.
Yes.
I never would have thought that ever, because it's always used in, like, to forge some sword or armor or something like that. But, and I don't know. It felt very MacGuffin-y.
Sure. So. Yeah, well, I think that from what I saw, just doing a basic amount of research, was they were saying that Jason Momoa was the one that initially had the idea for the sequel. And I know that Jason Momoa is, like, very active with, like, saving marine life and protecting the environment. Like, that's a big cause for him. He mentioned that on, like, Saturday Night Live when he was the host recently. And, you know, there's clearly a, like, global warming message in this movie.
Which I think is nice. It's something that's never addressed in movies. And they, one of my favorite things about the movie is that they kind of imply that they can reverse it at the end, you know?
Yes.
Like, human and Atlantic technology can reverse the destruction of the ozone layer. And I'm like, wow, that's like the most positive outcome of a movie ever.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's got this great ending where, like, Atlantis, you know, rises up and meets with the surface. And it kind of does feel like this satisfying payoff, because it addresses a lot of stuff in the first movie. And it's like moving society forward by the end of this movie.
Yeah. It,
but it's funny because there's this one channel I watch a lot now called Emergency Awesome. And I didn't even know about the mid-credit scene or post-credit scene with Orm. But he did a whole video on that. And he was saying that he felt, the guy who does Emergency Awesome, that there should have been some kind of better send-off of the DCEU at the end. Do you think that that is true? Like, that maybe, like, since they knew this was the last movie eventually, they should have, like, tacked something on?
No. Honestly, the positive thought of solving an actual real-world problem is the most positive and best thing the movie could have ended on.
Okay.
What were they gonna have a cameo or something like that to which promotes nothing? This is literally the end of it. This was kind of like a really weird project where, you know, they came in swinging with Zack Snyder and that whole aesthetic, and then they pivoted to MCU copycats, and it just didn't mesh, and that's why it failed. So yeah. I think just throwing it out there and leaving it as it is there was the best thing they could have done.
Okay. I think I agree with you on that one too. It's funny because, you know, I think you've probably heard this, but Ben Affleck was going to make a cameo at one point. Michael Keaton was going to make a cameo at one point.
I don't know how. What logically, which one makes sense here? Because after Flash, like, isn't it going to be George Clooney now?
So do you want me to give you the context? Because Emergency Awesome went through it. It's pretty interesting. So essentially what was going to happen was there was going to be like a post-credit or mid-credit scene where it was going to be Aquaman and then Michael Keaton's Batman. That was the first thing they did. The first thing was the Michael Keaton Batman. But then the order of the DC movies got moved around because this was supposed to come out before The Flash. And so I think that, like, Michael Keaton's Batman was going to be, like, exciting because they're like, oh, shit, he's going to be in The Flash. It was going to, like, lead into that. But then people are also going to be like, wait, why is Michael Keaton's Batman there? So there's that. Then once this movie got moved to be after The Flash, then they moved it to be Ben Affleck's Batman. And Jason Momoa is the one that revealed that. He like showed that he was filming with Ben Affleck, and he's like, oh, I don't think I'm supposed to show this. And the idea of what they were going to do with the Michael Keaton Batman was they were going to essentially have this like new Justice League. I mean, we've talked about this before, but I think this is really intriguing, where it's like it was going to be the Sasha Kale or Calais Supergirl. It was going to be the Batgirl from the movie that just got completely destroyed. It was going to be Michael Keaton's Batman, and then I guess like Jason Momoa's Aquaman and Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman.
And I guess Flash too.
Yeah, and I guess, Ezra Miller's Flash, right? So they were fully planning on sort of like revitalizing the DCEU brand, and then they just like, I guess, got cold feet and just brought James Gunn in, who then just shut the whole thing down.
I mean, honestly, I know we haven't seen anything yet, but it's probably the smartest move. But like I mentioned before, this experiment of Mick trying to make Zack Snyder with other things didn't work.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a praise for Zack Snyder in any way there, because it's I think although I did think it worked kind of well, and I did like Man of Steel. It's too overly serious, I think. And, you know, I guess people didn't really, you know, like it. And then that's when they pivoted to that kind of more lighthearted MCU-ish tone.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't mix well. And they really needed to reboot it. And, you know, normally when you see these reboots, you see like a huge time gap between them. Like, you know, talk about Spider-Man and between Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, it was like 4 years, 3-4 years.
Yeah.
Something like that. But we're going to get stuff not next year, but early or mid 2025. That's a very short amount of time for a full reboot, you know?
Of course. Of course. Well, we are going to get something in 2024. We're getting the Creature Commandos animated show.
Okay. Yes. That'll be something. And then I guess sort of Blue Beetle counts, maybe. I don't know.
That's a weird thing. Yeah. Yeah. I think that if Blue Beetle had been a bigger deal, they probably would have said like, oh, this is really a DCU movie. But, you know, Blue Beetle was a bomb as well.
Yeah.
It's funny. We don't really rank movies for our channel. Like, wait, what the fuck? We actually rank movies a lot. No, we don't usually give them like a rating of like, you know, 5 stars or anything like that. But I was thinking about all these 15 movies as I was listing them out, and I couldn't say that any of them are a 5-star movie.
No.
Whereas with the MCU, I could say there's at least maybe 2 or 3 that are like 5-star movies.
Maybe a 5 out of 10.
Oh my God.
No, man, no, Brian. No. That was just a joke. I don't really feel that way. I would rate some more than 5 out of 10.
Well, I think that's a good segue, because we also have to talk about Rebel Moon this morning.
Yes.
What do you call it? We did our rankings. And I know we didn't really talk about the actual movie of Aquaman that much, but I mean, it's kind of cheesy.
Yeah, we kind of did. I mean, okay. In closing, I will say I did legitimately enjoy the cockroach joke, and maybe that's why I didn't mind it being the post-credit teaser, or, you know, tag, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? If that like translated into the comics where like Arthur is blonde and looks like Patrick Wilson and he's eating cockroaches, I'd fucking love that.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah, because doesn't even Jason Momoa say, like, the shrimp of the land? He says something like that, right?
Yeah. Because he kind of looks like that.
Yeah, and I can't remember. I think even the Emergency Awesome guy was like, there are people in the real world that just eat bugs like that already.
Yeah. But so, I think most people would think that's kind of gross.
Right, right. True. Good call. All right, man. Well, then let's do our rankings for the DCEU. Do you want to do yours first, or you want me to go first?
I can do mine first. So starting from the bottom. So wait, we have to lay a couple ground rules here, because I think we're doing this a little different than the last time.
Yes.
So we're only doing DCEU movies.
Correct.
And so that excludes the Batman.
Yes.
And it also excludes Joker, which I have not seen.
Good for you, man.
and then we're also going to rank, because we're doing Rebel Moon, I guess, we're going to rank Zack Snyder's Justice League and not the Joss Whedon Justice League.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, my logic behind that, which is maybe stupid, is that was kind of the original intention of the movie, or at least as close to the original intention of the movie, and they actually did release it. I know that with Suicide Squad, there was an original idea for that too, and it just got butchered, and we were never going to see it. But I was like, you know, let's just base it on like what it was originally supposed to be.
Yeah, and I totally would watch a director's cut of the original Suicide Squad. I'm just out of curiosity.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
So we'll start with that. At number 15 is Suicide Squad. That was, to me, the worst one. After that, next is Wonder Woman 84. I really didn't like that movie. Then I have Batman v Superman.
Huh.
I have Shazam 2. I have Black Adam. I have the Snyder Cut of Justice League. Then I have The Flash, Blue Beetle. I have Aquaman 2, and then I have Aquaman. I'm kind of like pretty even on both. I didn't really know how to rank them. I don't know.
Yeah.
After that, at number 5 is Birds of Prey. Number 4, Wonder Woman. 3, The Suicide Squad. 2, Shazam. And 1, Man of Steel.
Huh. Okay. That is interesting stuff, because you have like the same kind of top 5, but in a different order. You have the bottom 2 are the exact same as me.
That's pretty much the same thing with every one of our lists.
Yes. And then the middle is just like random, you know, as hell.
It is. I had a tough time with the middle. It's always hard to put them in the middle. As you get to have these larger lists, we're in 15 fucking things of things that came out over 10 years ago, some of these things, you know?
Yes.
So it's hard to remember stuff.
Right. But it's funny because like all this shit is just constantly in the Discord. You know, they're always talking about DC movies, the Snyder stuff. It's just always, always being talked about. You ever notice that?
Yeah.
All right, let's do my rankings so we can move on to Rebel Moon. Okay, so number 15, Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad. 14, Wonder Woman 1984. God, that movie's really bad. I have The Flash as 13. Then Black Adam, then Batman v Superman. I was like, I think I actually enjoy Batman v Superman. Even though it's bad, it's stupid, it's overly long, I still think it's...
It's funny. You know what's funny is I think you defended The Flash a lot more than I did when we reviewed that. So this is surprising to me.
Yeah. Sometimes with this channel, there's a few things where I'm like, oh, why did I praise that? And then it's like, it's not as good.
Yeah.
Let's see. Then Aquaman, the first one I have for 10. Aquaman, the second one I have right above it, because I like the second one better than the first one. Blue Beetle is number 8. The Snyder Cut is number 7. Shazam Fury of the Gods is number 6. Above that is the original Shazam. Birds of Prey is number 4. The Suicide Squad is number 3. Man of Steel is number 2. And Wonder Woman is number 1.
Yeah, that's not too different. I think the only real big thing there is Shazam 2 is the big difference.
Yeah, I think I liked it more than you did, huh?
I guess so, yeah. And you know what? Maybe I probably should drop The Flash down lower, because the ranking of The Flash at number 9 for me is probably solely because I saw Michael Keaton as Batman.
Okay. Yeah. The reason why I have it so low is I just keep thinking of Ezra Miller's fucking tooth falling out of their head, and I just think that that's so embarrassing that is like the way that movie ends. And then that whole battle sequence with like Zod, and then all the stuff where they're in the Speed Force, I just think that's really bad, like a CGI mess.
Yep, I totally 100% agree.
One last thing before we wrap up Aquaman, I do want to say that I do like the chemistry between Jason Momoa and Patrick Wilson. I think that it's a really great movie for Patrick Wilson, because essentially it's about his like redemption. When Dolph Lundgren gets wrapped up by the squid and he's going to fall, did you think that it was going to be that Orm like did a villainous turn and he was going to let him die?
Totally. Yeah. No. I felt that turn almost twice. Is that one scene, because he gives that little smirk, and but then he comes around and saves him. And then also when he grabs the staff for the second time when they're fighting, I couldn't even tell you what the villain's name was.
I think it's like Kardax or something, but it's
Kardax. And I recognized that he was some guy from Game of Thrones who I didn't think looked like the character at all, and I can't remember the character's name.
Euron Greyjoy.
Euron Greyjoy. Yeah, I didn't think he looked like Euron Greyjoy, but I noticed, I recognized him instantly, even though I don't know if it was his voice or anything like that. We only saw the actor himself like once the entire movie. But I thought that when he grabs the staff there, I thought maybe he was going to turn and be the ultimate villain here, and you know that didn't happen either. But I'm glad they had the redemption arc. I think it worked well, and I was happy to see that.
Yeah, that's the best part of the movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, that was good.
The warm redemption stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. So it's funny because there's a lot of Game of Thrones stuff that we're already starting to mention. There's so much Game of Thrones stuff in Rebel Moon that I want to talk about with you. But one last thing too, I forgot to mention this, is that when you do see his name's like Kardax or whatever the fuck the main big bad is that's possessing Black Manta, when they have a flashback to his time in ancient Atlantis, it really looks like Warcraft or like Warhammer.
Ooh,
to me.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah,
with like his kingdom. And there's a lot of Warhammer stuff in Rebel Moon, which we're going to record after this. But I really, Atlantis stuff, it really looks like Warcraft to me, like with the two brothers and their armor and their kingdoms and stuff. And then the undead kind of creatures coming up. It's sort of like the Lich King.
Lich King, yeah.
But Emergency Awesome, when he was doing his channel, I'm doing so much plugging for this guy. But he was basically saying that like the story that happens in the past essentially parallels the story in the present, because the King Atlan, it's his brother that he goes to war with, and it's like Aquaman and Orm going to battle with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I admire that they like at least put even that much thought into this movie, but still, it's just this big dumb movie. But I didn't necessarily think it was boring. Did you ever think it was boring?
I didn't think it was boring. No.
Okay. So that's good enough. Not boring, really stupid. Jason Momoa's got charisma. He's not necessarily Aquaman.
Yeah, that's a great summary.
Yeah. All right, well, that being said, guys, this is the day after Christmas. We hope that you had a good one. Brian and I have to go record Rebel Moon now, but make sure that you like and subscribe, and we'll see you guys next time.